Welcome to Fixated, the Fixed Income Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Moran, Editorial Director of Fixed Income News Australia. Join me as I talk about the latest news, views and education in fixed income investment. I'll be joined by industry experts from Australia and across the globe. Welcome. Today we have Andrew Lockhart, Managing Partner at Metrics Credit Partners. Good morning, Andrew.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. What an interesting few weeks we've had. Tell me, markets have been so volatile over the last year or so. Has that volatility been transferred to private debt markets?
No, we haven't seen that in the same extent as investors have seen it in both public market equities and public market bonds. And the reason for that is the loans that are held in private credit investment vehicles are loans that are generally not traded. And so they're loan assets, the fundamentals associated with the credit risk, associated with lending money to a company, is what really drives the risk. And as a result of that, if a private lender has made good loans and the companies are paying their interest and servicing their debt and repaying, then, you know, that volatility is removed. We do see, you know, obviously changes in asset valuations as a result of changes in credit spreads and margins. But generally what's occurred in the last 12 months is those margins and fees have actually moved higher, delivering a total higher income for investors. So that volatility has been mooted as a result of sort of adjustments in market pricing.
Great. So even if you have a private debt portfolio, a volatile public market won't directly impact your investment in that private market.
Yeah. At the end of it, I think as a lender, there are a range of things that we do that protect and preserve investor capital. And that comes down to, you know, deep due diligence in terms of the companies you lend to understand what are the drivers of the company or the project's cash flows, and how as you as a lender can be comfortable that the company will service and repay its debt. And then our role as a lender is to mitigate risk. And so by imposing appropriate terms and conditions and covenants and taking of security, we're designing structures that can withstand a deterioration in business or economic conditions to ensure that that risk is really properly borne by shareholders and equity. It shouldn't be the risk of a lender, and particularly a secured lender, first mortgage, first ranking secured creditor in the Australian market. You also get a lot of protections under Australian corporate insolvency law that is also designed to be protective of the interests of a secured creditor.
No, very important in this environment. So as the market starts to turn and growth starts to slow, how does that impact private debt, especially if we still have the some inflation in the market?
Yeah, it's interesting. I look at our market a little bit differently. And the way I look at it is most Australian companies are unrated, and therefore their access to alternative sources of capital is quite restricted. Australia doesn't have a deep liquid bond market for corporates of any size or scale. And so most borrowers are reliant on the banks for funding. And so as a private lender in the Australian market, what you're actually offering a company is a valuable means to diversify their funding sources. And the trade-off for us is that we want to build relationships with companies to have a deep understanding of their business and understand what drives their cash flow and the risks that you take, and then you mitigate that risk. But the reason you have that relationship and you have access to private information to be able to assess and manage risk is to deliver a good outcome for investors. And when economic or business conditions slow, what you tend to find is that there's a withdrawal of market liquidity. Banks are less likely or willing to lend. And so the pendulum, I think, sort of moves in the favour of a lender. You know, you get higher margins, improved fees, but also because there's less competition for capital, because liquidity is tighter, you tend to find that the terms and conditions upon which you lend are more conservative. And so all of those things are protective. And really, the role of a lender is to look through economic cycles and to determine what is the sustainable debt structure a company can support, and making sure that equity is providing the capital to support the company's activities, and a lender's not taking equity risk. That's very important that people understand that. As a lender, your role is to really mitigate risk and ensure that the capital is protected through the appropriate terms and conditions upon which you lend. but using your skill set as a private lender, negotiating directly with companies appropriate fees and margins to reward investors for the risk that you take in providing that debt financing.
It's so much lower risk than the equity position in the capital structure, and I think that's really important to note. Now, as interest rates have risen, has private debt returns kept pace with rate hikes?
Yes. We've got an interesting dynamic at the moment because you've got the Reserve Bank withdrawing liquidity through the repayment of the TFF, and obviously given market movements in public securities, the banks are facing into an increase in cost of funding. And so, and then you've got the market rates that are designed to slow economic and business conditions, so the Reserve Bank increasing interest rates. So for us, it's really important that the investors understand the vast bulk of the loans that we hold in our portfolios are short-dated and floating rate. And the reason we lend for short periods and we have floating rates is we believe it's protective of an investor's interest. You know, you can assess the credit risk much more confidently over a shorter period of time. Investors are not exposed to significant changes or bouts of volatility and market risk. And because of the floating rates, you know, investors participate in rising income, total income, as those base rates flow through. So every time a borrower resets their interest rate, say every 30 days or 60 days, they are paying the market rate of the day. So if the Reserve Bank has increased interest rates during that period of time, then the borrower will pay immediately pay that higher market-based rate. The credit spreads also are changing, reflecting the withdrawal of liquidity and, I guess, nervousness and concerns in the market around business and economic slowdown. So as a lender, you're wanting to make sure that you're charging appropriately for that risk. And so, yes, the total income that's available to investors through our portfolios has increased materially in line with rising interest rates.
So with higher interest rates, has that had any impact on demand from your borrowers?
Yeah, if you come back again to the comment I made earlier, we're still a very much a bank-dominated market in Australia. I think a lot of investors, even in Australia, your point, understanding that where you sit in the capital structure is really important because a lot of investors feel that they understand investment markets and have portfolios that are heavily skewed towards equities and a lot more susceptible to risk and volatility in their performance of those portfolios. But, you know, certainly as a lender, what we see is a gradual decline or a gradual withdrawal of capacity by the banks, and there's no real alternative available. And so, you know, that need to build out a private debt market in Australia is very important, but it's still a long way to go. You know, the market still remains in Australia very much dominated by the four domestic major banks, and then you have a number of large offshore foreign lenders. I think the work that our team have done looking at the size and scale of metrics capability in the market, we would be ranked around about the 12th largest corporate lender in the Australian market, being bank and non-bank lender. So you can see even at our size and scale, we're small in comparison to the banks. But, you know, over time, we expect, you know, continued support from our investors. And if that's the case, then we'll continue to grow our scale. But, you know, demand for credit, I don't think, you know, we at Metrix wouldn't think that the economy is heading in towards a recession. And we think that credit growth and demand for credit remains strong. And so that need to be able to raise capital from investors to support the demands from our borrowers is very important to us.
I think what you're doing is really important to the Australian economy because there aren't those avenues that there are in the US or Europe to have that private market. And, you know, I expect a significant growth in the coming years. So very important work you're doing, Andrew, but let's move on. So just in terms of building a portfolio, I mean, each loan is different. Each loan document's different. It's tailored to the borrower and to yourselves, you know, assessing terms and conditions that you need to make sure things are tight. Can you describe perhaps the portfolio and the, you know, the range of loan sizes and what different maturities and what a typical borrower might look like?
We operate in our funds, in Metrics Credit Partners, focused on primarily the large end corporate and institutional borrowers, where it's predominantly more than one lender that provides the total financing requirements of the company or a project. And so that might be, you know, a company borrowing, you know, $500 million plus, where they may have four or five lenders providing that total debt commitment amount. Generally, what you would have in our market is four key private debt markets, and they are loans to corporates, publicly listed corporates. And so we have facilities to a number of Australian Stock Exchange listed companies. There's a component that is project and infrastructure funding, and so that really relates to large-scale government-backed PPPs and the like, where large infrastructure projects, toll roads and hospitals and things are being built. The third area of the loan market is in commercial real estate, and that's multi-asset class, so it's residential, industrial, commercial office, specialised use property assets and the like. And very diversified from a geographic perspective. And then the fourth area of the loan market activity is really lending for what we call financial sponsors or private equity acquired companies, where it's highly structured in terms of the ability to provide financing to those companies, because you don't have any recourse to other shareholder capital. So across those four parts of the market, each is quite bespoke. And so, you know, the rule of thumb is generally if it's a large investment grade publicly listed company, that company might be able to borrow on an unsecured, senior unsecured basis. All other borrowers, sub-investment grade or where it's into a project or where it's a what we call a special purpose vehicle financing, they are always fully secured. And so as a lender, you tend to be first ranking senior secured. And if you think about, say, a company might say trade on, you know, 10 times earnings. As a lender, you might be providing three turns of earnings as the leverage. So, you know, seven times or eight times earnings in the capital structure at risk to equity. And say then also in, say, a property transaction, you may have transactions that may be very lowly geared at, say, you know, 30% to loan to valuation ratio. You may have others at a higher loan to valuation ratio. The role of a lender in all of those transactions is really to do the diligence, do the work to understand what is it that drives the cash flow, and then how confident are you as a lender that the value is going to hold and that you're going to receive the cash. So what people often don't realise is that a lender has priority claims on the cash flows of a company or a project. And so, you know, if you think about where business or economic conditions deteriorate, a lender might step in and stop a company from paying dividends to shareholders, and require those proceeds to be applied to debt repayment or just debt service in priority. A lender might stop a company from selling assets or buying assets.
That's really interesting, Andrew. Are all your borrowers Australian?
Yeah, in our funds and the mandates of our funds, we have funds that allow us only to lend to Australian borrowers, and there are funds that allow us to lend to Australian and New Zealand borrowers, and funds where we have a mandate to lend to Australian, New Zealand and developed Asian borrowers. It's also important that some companies, for instance, that we might provide financing to may have offshore subsidiaries. And so we also have some flexibility in our funds to support those offshore subsidiaries of Australian companies with financing. But the very most significant volume of it, it'd be well in the high 90% of all of the facilities that we have are to Australian companies based in Australia.
So when we last spoke, you had mentioned that demand was higher for loans and investment funds available. Is that still the case?
Yes, very much so. The demand for credit, I look at it this way. I think that we offer a service and a product proposition to a company that allows that company to diversify their funding sources away from the banks. And we have flexibility across our fund mandates to be very relevant to those companies. From, you know, some of our funds do, you know, investment grade senior debt, others of our funds subordinated mezzanine debt. So depending on the mandate that we have, we do have substantial flexibility to be supportive of companies and how they're financed. So my view is, I think that's a very valuable source of capital, and therefore we should make sure that our investors are properly rewarded for that for that capital. And so, you know, I think the demand is strong and high from borrowers looking to access alternative sources of funding. But equally, investors are well rewarded for taking on that risk. You know, if I think about our funds, really, they cater to two sort of portfolio allocation decisions for clients. At one end of the spectrum, it's an alternative to traditional fixed income. It's a defensive allocation. So private debt can be that defensive alternative asset allocation. At the other end of the spectrum, where you are investing in, say, mezzanine debt or subordinated debt, it actually is a portfolio allocation that is appealing for people that are looking to reduce equity exposure. You can generate an equity-like income through private debt, which actually delivers a higher total income, but for less risk than outright equity ownership. So the world of private debt is very broad, and it does cater to a range of different applications in investor portfolios. So we do see strong interest from investors, continued strong demand to invest in our funds, but it's certainly outstripped by the demand for credit for companies. And I think, you know, we do probably around about 20% of the transactions that we would see.
I think it's amazing for diversification for a personal portfolio to be able to invest in Australian commercial loans. You know, that's not something many people do invest in, but that stability of the asset class and the consistency of returns is particularly very useful for investors in or near a retirement. Now, concentrating on Metrics Credit Partners, what's unique about your investment strategy and process?
Yeah, look, I think myself and my partners and a number of the senior people within a business have all come from working in banks. And so we have a very a clear understanding of risk and how to assess and manage credit risk and have developed those skills over a number of decades. But equally, what sets us apart is that we've been successful in raising investor capital, which means that our funds are large and scalable and well-diversified. So an investor can gain exposure to our funds, and in some of our funds, we provide investors with exposure to over 300 individual borrowers, where the average exposure to any one individual counterparty is less than 0.5%. So well-diversified, trying to limit investors' risk. So that size and scale is important to be beneficial to investors. And equally, you can pass through lower costs to investors. So, you know, I always think that banking and finance is not a high margin business. It's a large scale, low margin business. And therefore, you know, investors should be benefiting from the size and scale of a manager and benefiting in the form of lower costs. And that's what we've passed on to our investors. But equally, you know, on the borrower side, because we're large and scalable, we have the ability to be relevant to those borrowers where they're looking to, say, borrow $50 million or $100 million. We've got the capacity to provide that financing. I think our team have a very clear focus on cash flow and risk management. And so cash flow, debt service, we have a very strong understanding of the legal rights and protections that are afforded to a creditor or a lender, and have a skill set going over many decades where we've worked through different cycles and different market events to protect and preserve our investor capital. So one of the good things, I guess, about Metrics now is that we've operated in excess of 10 years since the launch of our first fund. And so as a result of that, investors can see quite clearly a long track record of performance across our various funds, where we've delivered consistent performance for our investors over that period of time, and also have delivered in excess of the minimum target returns across all of our funds. So, you know, I think investors that have been with us for a number of years have benefited and appreciated, hopefully, the work that our team has done to manage appropriately the risk that we take and deliver an acceptable return.
It's all about risk and return and pricing the risk appropriately for both parties, and you seem to have done that. It's really good. So why is origination capability so important when it comes to investment risk and returns?
Yeah, I think it's very important because it's what actually helps drive a return for an investor, but it also helps you to be able to manage the risk appropriately. And so what I always say is the investment that we as Metrics make in building good long-term relationships with our borrowers, and where we want to do repeat business with those borrowers, is a means to mitigate risk for our investors. But it's also a means to give them access to the investment opportunity. And so if you think about when a bank underwrites a transaction, say it's a large transaction, say it's $500 million, the fees that the banks will charge to that company are higher than when the bank distributes the loan and involves other lenders coming into the syndicate. And so if you have invested in that relationship and you've invested to originate that transaction, then the returns that you're able to generate for your investors should be higher than being a passive market participant that waits for an originating lender to bring a transaction to you. And so, you know, it's not without its risk. You know, but we've got a large team, 125 odd people within our business today, that are focused on all aspects of lending money, origination, risk management, the legal aspects, the administration of a loan. All of these things are important. And I see some smaller private debt managers that have smaller teams that just don't have the depth or depth of resources to be able to originate directly with the company. And so I think that the returns that investors would get from a smaller private debt manager will be less attractive. And I think also the size and scale is also important because it makes you relevant to better quality borrowers. So for instance, a couple of our funds have S&P ratings. One of our funds or two of our funds are rated by S&P as A- rated issuers. And that's really important to understand in terms of gaining access to the market. So in periods where people become nervous or concerned about the credit quality of a lender, our investors and our borrowers can see the credit quality that's assessed by S&P, understand the credit risk that they take, and that gives us access to borrowers that would otherwise not borrow from a non-bank lender. And I think that's important in terms of being, again, able to distinguish our activities.
So talking a little bit about the negative part of the market at the moment, or the downside, if you like, how do you manage the risk of defaults and credit loss in these times?
Yeah, we've obviously been watching the conditions now over 12 months. And as a result of that, I think we've moved fairly carefully to ensuring that we're primarily giving preference to our existing clients, and you manage the risk associated with those. You know, if you've done business with somebody in the past and you've had repeat transactions, you've got a greater knowledge and a greater degree of certainty in terms of how they behave and perform, and you understand their business or their projects more effectively. So, you know, that access to private information that is not publicly available to be able to assess the risk, but also forming value judgments around the quality of the management team, the strength of the management team. All of these things take time, but they're important in terms of understanding how you assess risk. Yeah, you can have a great company, but poor management, and it will underperform. And so your assessment of the quality of the people within the business or those that are undertaking the project, you know, do they have the experience, skill, track record? Have they demonstrated that in prior transactions or prior business dealings? All of these sorts of things are important to understand, you know, how good the people you're involved in doing business with are.
So are many of your borrowers repeat customers?
Yes. Yeah, we give a preference to those clients that we've done business with in the past and look to support those clients in new business activities or growth of their business.
So private debt used to be exclusively for institutional investors. And in terms of personal investors, what demographic typically invests in private debt?
I think it's an asset class that really does cater to different demands of different investors. So at one end of the spectrum, as I mentioned before, it can be that defensive part of a client portfolio. At the other end of the spectrum, it could be an equity market replacement. So we see from a retail client base, strong demand. So, you know, if you think about self-managed super fund investors or personal high net worth individuals or retirees looking for defensive investments or defensive asset classes, I think private debt delivers some of those characteristics in terms of positioning the capital structure, the security that a lender can take. But it also has delivered protection of investor capital because there hasn't been duration risk. It's primarily floating rate. And so as interest rates have risen, investors haven't seen, you know, declines in the values of the holdings of the assets. And so we tend to sort of market our capability to all investors, large institutional superannuation fund investors, insurance clients, universities, high net worth individuals, retail clients, and self-managed super fund clients. But what we've tried to do is create different funds with different mandates where an investor can say, okay, well, and if you think about our funds, we have a number that are available for retail clients. Some are focused on the more defensive part of a client portfolio, and we have others that are available for retail clients that are focused on being that equity market replacement. And the reason I say it's an equity market replacement is it may not be, you know, a senior position in the capital structure. It might be mezzanine, but it still ranks in priority to equity. And what you tend to find is that, again, equity is the asset class that is more volatile as earnings adjust and valuations adjust, whereas the debt, it's a contractual obligation that the company owes you. And as a lender, you've taken appropriate security to manage that risk. And so, you know, I think it does play different roles in different portfolios for different investors. But, you know, the return profile and the risk profile that our investors have been exposed to, I think, has met their expectations.
Just finally, it'd be good to talk a little bit about your funds, you know, minimum investments, amounts, the targets and the actual performance over the last few years.
Sure. We have a range of funds that are for wholesale investors, some wholesale institutional investors, and that covers at one end of the spectrum, our diversified Australian senior loan fund that seeks to deliver bank bills plus three, secured private debt fund, which is primarily lending for private equity sponsored transactions, bank bills plus four. These are the minimum target returns. Our real estate fund, which is predominantly first ranking senior secured mortgage positions, bank bills plus five. And then we have the higher yielding credit trust that seeks to deliver investors 11% plus. And these are net returns. For retail clients, we operate three funds, two ASX listed funds. So the Metrics Master Income Trust was the fund that we first launched to the market, which gives investors daily liquidity through trading on the stock exchange in the units of the fund. So that fund was launched in October of 2017. It currently has around about $1.75 billion of capital invested. Investors receive monthly income distribution and they can buy and sell the units on the stock exchange on a daily basis. The second fund that was listed back in April of 2019, which is the Metrics Income Opportunities Trust, was really designed to be that equity market replacement. It seeks to deliver investors a minimum cash coupon return of 7%. With upside participation through equity optionality. So options that we might hold over a company or warrants or where we hold an equity position in a company that we've lent to. So they're the two ASX listed funds. One, that defensive allocation, MXT, MOT, really designed to be that equity market replacement in client portfolios.
Great. One last question that comes to mind, Andrew. Do investors invest in both of those ASX listed funds as well?
Yeah, they do. And it's because they realise it's part of a broader portfolio. And so in a portfolio, people might have, you know, equities, they might have bonds, they might have cash, they might have some hybrids, they might have some, you know, defensive alternatives, they might have some growth alternatives. So it's really a function of understanding what the risk is, what the return objective is that you're and the reason you're allocating to that asset class, and then what are the ways in which you can manage liquidity and market risk associated with those. And we have designed a range of different vehicles that allow investors access to private debt but in different fund formats or fund investment vehicles or products.
Andrew Lockhart, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really good to chat and hear more about private debt. Thank you
very much, Liz. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us this week on Fixated, the Fixed Income Podcast. Still hungry for more fixed income news, views and education? Then visit fixedincomenews.com.au and don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter to have the latest news delivered right to your inbox. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Elizabeth Moran and we'll see you next episode on Fixated, the Fixed Income Podcast.